This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry. With Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. And now, here are your hosts, Michael Feldman and Addison Snell.
It's a new year, and we're going people watching.
11 people to watch for 2011.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to our special People to Watch edition of Soundbite. I'm Michael Feldman, editor of HPC Wire, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Addison Snell, CEO of Intersect 360 Research. Good morning, Addison.
Good morning, Michael.
And we also have with us Jeff Hyman, publisher and president of HPC Wire. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thanks, Michael. Great to be here.
Hey, Jeff, it's great to have you on the show with us. I look forward to People to Watch every year. It's something very exciting for me. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Addison. It's a real pleasure to be on the show, and I have to tell you, I'm a big fan. I listen every week. I really enjoy the dialogue that both you and Michael are able to put together. It's incredibly insightful, and we're just very thankful to have you on the show. I'm thrilled to be here, and I hope people that are listening from the HPC Wire community will tell their friends about it, so please pass your words around. You know, you guys have done a wonderful job of putting together a list of 11 people that are very, very representative of our audience.
Well, it's your list, Jeff, and I know that it's an honor to be included, so why don't you kick it off and introduce our first person to watch for 2011?
Happy to do it. Number one on our list is a computational scientist from Oak Ridge National Labs named Dr. Eduardo Apra. Dr. Apra is being honored for any number of reasons, but in particular, it's his work with computational chemistry and his development of an application called NWChem that has really caught our attention. For those of you who are not familiar with NWChem, it's an application that just very recently was able to put together an astounding number of calculations in a second. And by astounding, if you don't think that 1.39 thousand trillion calculations in a single second is incredible, I don't know how to put that into words. Dr. Apra is working on mostly on water technologies. And given that water is this globe's most precious resource, I think he's a man that's worth keeping a close eye on. He's keeping an eye on the water. We're keeping an eye on him. Addison, what more can you shed on the doctor's work in the past 12 months?
Well, I don't know him personally, but NWChem I'm certainly quite familiar with. This is an excellent choice. NWChem shows up in our end-user site census studies as one of the more commonly used applications across bio in an area that's very reliant on open-source code. So certainly having a dramatic effect throughout the industry.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Apra is one of these guys behind the scenes. I mean, I don't know him personally either, but this is a great accomplishment. You know, one of the criticisms of these petaflop supercomputers is that the codes don't scale to use all that performance. They end up sort of building a big machine and then cutting it up. And he and his team was able to achieve this, you know, 1.39 petaflops on this application, which is a great accomplishment and shows the value of this kind of investment at Oak Ridge and the DOE. So it is a great accomplishment, and hopefully he can do more of that work, and that's why we're going to be watching him this year.
Really showing the strength of that Jaguar system, that production system at Oak Ridge. Very strong, excellent application using that supercomputing power. Jeff, who do you have up next?
Well, next up on the list is another computational scientist, but this time from the world of biology. And this is an area that's really near and dear to my heart. Prior to working at HPC Wire, I worked for International, which is owned and operated by Pat McGovern. Pat launched a magazine about a decade ago entitled BioIT World, focusing specifically on high-performance computing and its ability to accelerate the pace of drug discovery. And Pat's a visionary and very well ahead of his time. And our next recipient, who I might mention is a repeat winner from 2004, is Dr. Wu Chun Feng. Now, Dr. Feng has done some remarkable stuff in the field of computational biology. And what we like about him, and it's very difficult to just pick one computational biologist, is that he is representative of a slew of scientists who are out there using high-performance computing and using it to try to come up with drugs, better drugs and faster drugs. Dr. Eric Lander, who ran the Whitehead Institute for so many years, was quoted a long time ago as saying that the people like himself and Dr. Feng will let capitalists live long enough to recognize a return on their investment. And given the dependency that we have on new drugs and the importance that it plays, we couldn't be more thrilled to recognize a computational biologist for his efforts. So, Michael, you can talk a little bit more about the doctor's contributions. I mean, he was into green computing before anybody even had coined the term. What is it about Dr. Feng that impresses you the most?
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, he was one of these guys that was talking about green computing, you know, 10 years before, literally 10 years before it was fashionable. He was talking about it at SC in 2001, talking about his Green Destiny machine, which was an early version of a very power-efficient supercomputing cluster. The really gutsy pick would have been to pick on people to watch for 2001 because he was literally a decade ahead of his time. And now green computing, of course, is, you know, of everybody's concern, and not just in HPC, across the whole enterprise, business computing, everywhere. So he's a guy that is ahead of his time, and that's why we're watching him, because we want to see what else he's going to come up with and see what's in the future. So we love the pick here.
I originally came across his work on architectures with the Orion Multisystems, which is a low-power architecture, although he's moved on from that company, which didn't take off. Again, maybe it just proved to have been ahead of its time a little bit. That nature of those energy-efficient architectures is certainly alive and well today.
Well, next up on the list is Melissa Fratkin. And Melissa comes to us from TAC, where she's an industrial programs director. She's one of two women that have made the list. She is regarded nationally as one of the most important women in the field of high-performance computing. Her star is on the rise. In our opinion, she's a leader in the making and a woman that really deserves our attention, our consideration, and our gratitude. Addison, what is it about Melissa that impresses you the most?
You know, I've known Melissa for several years in this industry, though she's still quite young with a long leadership career ahead of her. I began working with her when she was at the U.S. Council on Competitiveness and really raising the visibility of the need to drive HPC into more industry. She's moved from there to TAC at Texas, where she heads up this industrial program, the STAR Alliance, and is instrumental in partnering TAC with industry nearby and helping them adopt HPC for the first time. I think she's going to be running her own lab before you know it. I think she's a fantastic person. And in terms of labeling someone person to watch in terms of going into the future, you couldn't have a better pick. This is someone who's going to be doing great things in HPC for a long time.
Yeah, I agree. Melissa seems like a real up-and-comer. She's been working behind the scenes for a long time, and now she's got a little more of a profile now that she's the industrial programs director there at TAC, but she's, like you mentioned, working at the Council of Competitiveness as a policy director without a lot of the recognition that some of the C-level people were getting. And she was working at CASC too. And I think this new position at TAC will give her a little more of an ability to get her name out there and do some really interesting work that's much needed in the community, linking the commercial area with the supercomputing centers.
Well, she's been around strong people in HPC for a long time, right? I mean, she was behind Susie Titchener at Council on Competitiveness. Susie's now at Oak Ridge. She's with Jay Boisseau, Dan Stanzione at TAC. So she's been on these great teams. Say nothing of the fact that her mother is Sue Fratkin from CASC. So she's got a lot of HPC lineage there, but absolutely Melissa, someone to be watched of her own accord, and we're going to keep seeing those great things.
Well, speaking of being around, I've been around a while too, and I'm almost afraid to say I graduated from college back in 1981, so that's 30 years ago. And back when I graduated from business school, everybody wanted to go to work for IBM. So it's not really a surprise to anybody that one of the people to watch on our list would come out of Big Blue, and this year's recipient is extremely well-deserving, and that's Dr. Alan Gara. IBM, you know, we live in an age of entrepreneurship, and young people coming out of school today all want to, you know, jump off and do their own thing, but somehow IBM seems to be able to continue to attract the brightest of the bright. And, you know, they've got a great brand, and we all know that, but you've got to continue to keep that thing moving. And the custodians of that brand today, with Dr. Gara being this year's recipient and representative, have just continued to do astounding work. And say what you want, IBM is still the preeminent company in this space. And the work that Dr. Gara is doing, I'm sure, would make the Watsons very proud. Mike, what's Dr. Gara working on, and why should we be watching them so carefully?
Well, I mean, Dr. Gara is almost a household name in this industry. He's the fellow that designed BlueGene, which has become obviously a very important system over the last decade. But currently, he's going to be working on IBM's Exascale initiative. So we're going to watch him for that reason, not just for his legacy. The Exascale work is obviously going to be very important to IBM and to a few of their competitors. So his work and his contributions are going to be really under our scrutiny.
Yeah, when you look at the landscape of systems in high-performance computing, obviously we went through a whole transition of moving away from proprietary architectures to very industry-standard clusters, and everyone talks about the demise of proprietary architecture, while meanwhile, very quietly, you've got these BlueGene systems, which are, you know, these proprietary architecture systems that were originally designed or conceived of for a small number of, you know, specialized case supercomputing applications that have taken off as this really dominant supercomputing architecture for certain segments. So Dr. Gara's contributions there in IBM's 100th year are really noteworthy and an excellent choice for a person to watch.
So our next person to watch comes from another big company that's a household name, but they're starting to focus on the little guys. And I'm referring to Microsoft, and in particular, I'm referring to Bill Helfs, who is the general manager of the technical computing group at Microsoft. Now, for any of you listeners who were at supercomputing this year, you couldn't miss Microsoft's booth. It was dead center, it was gigantic, and it was packed. People were coming and going, and it was buzzing. And Microsoft has really taken this vertical by storm. Bill is the general manager, and he's got a big-time team behind him. Last year, we honored Kirill Fainov. He has Deborah Goldfarb, who most of our readers know, used to be the CEO here at Tabor Communications, and who we are still very fond of and in great gratitude for the hard work that she put in into building HPC Wire into the brand that it is today. He has Bill Hamilton, who's another hard-charging guy who one of these days is going to be running somebody's company somewhere. Windows is just eating away at Linux. I mean, you didn't really see much of Novell or Red Hat there. They don't seem to be worried about it, but Microsoft is making a big splash, and Bill is heading the charge, reporting directly to Steve Ballmer. So this is big-time stuff. Mike, we met with Bill at Supercomputing. We talked to him a lot about the difference between technical computing and supercomputing and high-performance computing. You know, what do you think he's up to? Is he changing the name, or is he really changing the game?
Well, I think he and Microsoft, they have a different way to look at the supercomputing and HPC community. They came into it late, so that was bound to happen. But yeah, they don't even like using the word HPC anymore. They're all into technical computing. They're very much involved in the cloud side of it as well. It's a different slant. I like Bill's take on it, and he seemed like a very intelligent guy and really attuned to the community. But at the same time, he talks about it in such a way that is a little bit different from the way everybody else is doing it. So it's not an echo chamber coming from Microsoft. It's a different way of approaching the community, and I like it. I think it's much needed. Microsoft is doing a service to the community by approaching it in a different way. And, you know, Bill, I think, is the guy to lead this. So we're going to be watching him this year. It's a good pick for us.
Right. When we were talking earlier about bringing HPC to more environments, Windows is going to be a critical part of that, because you're talking about people adopting tools that they're familiar with. And this technical computing initiative we've been quite favorable toward, because it focuses not only on Microsoft HPC server, but brings in functionality from Azure. It brings in a development environment with Visual Studio. It even brings in some of the high-end Excel functions. functionality. Furthermore, Jeff, you were talking about focusing on the little guys. I think that's actually kind of a misnomer in a way. We're so used to talking about the supercomputing crowd, but I think Microsoft understands as well or better than any other company that when they're marketing to someone who's adopting HPC for the first time, they don't think of that as little. This is going to be the biggest machine they've ever bought, and Microsoft does a good job of talking to potential users on that level. Excellent pick.
Yeah, I agree, and that's great insight, Addison. Thanks. Next up is Dr. Richard Murphy from Sandia Labs, and we are watching Richard for a few reasons. First off, at Sandia, he's running a program called Excalibur, which is a DARPA ubiquitous HPC effort that helps create low-power systems at various scales. He's also doing something very cool with this Graph 500 steering committee. And that's kind of like a who's who of everybody in the industry, and Dick seems to be running it. Which is the more important deal, Addison, Graph 500 or Excalibur?
Well, you know, they're both big deals, and they're equally worthy of being on the list, and I think that's what probably brings you this as a noteworthy choice, because with Excalibur, this is, again, the idea of trying to bring HPC into more areas, in fact, in ways that you don't even realize you're using HPC. Graph 500, though, is interesting because Top 500 has been, criticized over time as, well, it only measures this one thing. In some applications, it's good for and some it's less good for. The idea of getting into some of these other 500 lists, we talked about Green 500 just previously, or Graph 500 now, being able to measure supercomputers along more than one dimension, the idea that, you know, there is more than one way to think about whether this is a productive system, I think that's extremely important work, don't you, Michael?
Oh, without a doubt. I think we would have picked Dr. Murphy even if he hadn't been involved in the UHPC project with DARPA, because I think the Graph 500 is a very important organization now. So the market for data-intensive high-end applications, I think, is really growing now with Web 2.0 and things that have typically been outside of traditional HPC applications. And these graph problems that are being targeted by the Graph 500 benchmark are going to become more and more important. So Dr. Murphy's emphasis on this is very important, and I think that sort of overshadows even the work he's going to do in UHPC, which will be important. I think some of that work will be incorporated into the Excalibur project because he's so concerned about data-intensive supercomputing. But, yeah, this is, I think it's a new area, and he's one of these young guys that seem to have latched onto it very early, and this is why we're going to be watching him.
Thanks, Mike. Next up, I want to date myself again. I remember back in 1966 a movie that came out. It was called The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming. I don't know if you guys remember that. It was from Norman Jewison and Carl Reiner. And it was about a Russian submarine that somehow ran astray and got caught in shallow waters up here in New England off the coast and couldn't get out. And the townsfolk were scared to death. It was the height of the Cold War. And long story short, you know, they realized that the Russians weren't as scary as they thought, and in fact were pretty much just like us. And the Russians have come to the supercomputing world. They're here. And they're, you know, the guy who's leading the charge is a young guy. His name is Seva Aponosenko, and he's the CEO of Key Platforms, which is a relatively new player in the space that's been backed by the Russian government, specifically from Premier Putin, who wants to be a player in the high-performance computing space. And I just don't know how you can't watch a person and a country that essentially, whenever they want to be involved, they dominate. And whether it was the space race back in the 60s, the nuclear race in the 70s or the 80s, or now the high-performance computing race, all of a sudden I think Russia needs to be watched and accounted for. You know, Addison, what do you think? Is the new race a global race in supercomputing?
Well, you know, I've talked with Michael on previous podcasts and trade shows like our supercomputing special editions. We've been astonished. I've been astonished at how quickly T Platforms has burst onto the scene from being really non-existent to being at the forefront of discussions in supercomputing. I think a lot of that goes to Seva's work, and in particular the Extol interconnect technology. This is another proprietary interconnect that's coming on with differentiated performance in HPC. I think it's also attributable to the very strong bench strength that they've had with people like Elena Churakova, who've really presented a lot of the T-platform strategy at a lot of these sessions. They've been growing very quickly in obviously Russia and then across Europe, now looking at other geographies. I know that they've been growing and adding more staff. So in terms of another forward-looking pick for something and someone to watch in 2011, I think you can't do any better.
Yeah, when I first met these guys, I think at ISC in 2009, I was thinking, wow, this is a very interesting company. They seemed very savvy engineering-wise and very forward-looking, but I didn't think they would grow so quickly outside of their Russian base. I mean,
right.
They're...
You're talking ISC 2009. That's a year and a half ago, 18
yeah.
months later, and look what they've done.
Exactly. I mean, it's sort of astounding, and they've become the cray of Russia. They're looking now to Europe. They're possibly even North America, certainly Asia, Africa. They want to have a global footprint, and obviously at the same time be very strong in Russia and a former Russian state. So they've got some great products, very high-end products, supercomputing, petaflop-type architectures, as well as on down the line. So they're a very complete company. They're still small, but they seem to be growing very quickly, and Seva must be very proud of himself for being able to accomplish this in such a short period of time.
A few months ago, actually more than a few months ago, I guess about a year or so ago, when we were kind of in the height of the economic recession, I read an article about EMC, and their CEO was talking about, you know, recessions come and recessions go, but data always increases. And, you know, you want to invest in EMC because we're not worried. And so I loved that. And we, of course, have some really superior storage companies who, you know, focus on the high-performance computing space. And our next recipient is our second woman, and she comes from that space, and her name is Faye Perriman, and she's the new CEO of Canasus. And Faye has just stepped in recently. I have not had an opportunity to meet her. I think you guys have. I have met Barbara Murphy. Barbara is the CMO there and works directly for Faye. And, you know, they've inherited a company that has a legacy of really good products. But unfortunately, like some companies, they just haven't had the right executive management team to take them to the next level. And that's a problem because the storage space is dominated by a couple companies, and one in particular, Data Direct Networks, is a very, very good company run by Paul Block and Alex Buzzari, who are extremely accomplished executives and who play, you know, very hard. They're out there. They're growing their company. They're doing everything right. And for Canasus to compete, they really have to go out and find somebody, you know, with the ability to do that. So I guess, Addison, the question is she the right choice? I mean, it's a tough field. What do you think?
Well, I think you're going to find out whether she's the right choice. As to your point about being dominated by a few companies, that's where I'll actually disagree with you, Jeff. I think the point with storage in HPC right now is that it's a wide open field. We don't see any storage company with more than 10, 11, 12 points of market share. You were talking about EMC. They just bought Isilon. There's a lot of dynamic stuff at play right now, and that's where Faye comes in with regards to Panasis, because they have had very good technology. You know, Garth Gibson has been this great luminary who's still there at Panasis. He's been kind of the rock, the one constant. But the executive office, the marketing office has been a revolving door. They've been through a couple of different CEOs. They've been through several chief marketing leads. That whole team has changed around. And now Faye has a task in front of her to reassert Panasis in a position of technology leadership. There's a lot that Panasis analysis can gain because the storage area lacks that dominant player. You certainly have LSI and DataDirect who are in all, on a lot of the disk itself, but you go everything from large players like EMC to the smaller niche players like BlueArc, Panasis is right in there. So we're going to find out how this is going to play out in terms of something to watch you really want to see her do very well. I like the team that Faye has assembled. I've also met with Barbara Murphy, and there's a lot of excitement at Panasis right now. I think they've got a lot of good that they can do. So we'll see how it goes for Faye.
Yeah, I met Faye just briefly at SC last November, and I was very impressed. She seems very committed to expanding Panasis footprint. She sees, obviously they've had great technology, which you guys were just talking about. I mean, these guys invented RAID after all. But, they've never seemed to catch on big time in the way that they could have. And, Faye sees their place in a much bigger way than I think some of the former execs maybe did there. It's HPC, obviously, but even there, they never expanded into certain vertical areas the way they could have. They never really leveraged some of those relationships they established. They had one good customer in one vertical, and they sort of, rode that for a while, but they never reached out and, went to their competitor and tried to sell to them or their other four competitors. So Faye's vision seems to be much larger, and she has a different strategy, and the team, I think, has a different strategy. And it'll be interesting to watch, see how this plays out. But there's a lot of potential there, and she seems very level-headed and much of a go-getter. So it'll all be interesting in the next few years.
Next up is someone who I don't think is a secret to anybody. He's certainly not a secret to HPC Wire. He is a two-time winner. His name is Stephen Wheat, and he works for Intel Corporation. And Stephen is a brilliant guy and someone who, when he's in the room, commands a tremendous amount of respect because of the background that he has. He works out of Raj Hazra's group. Rajib just recently took that group over this year from another Intel star named Richard Draycott. Intel just has people to replace people. I mean, they talk about deep. I mean, they have as deep a bench as anybody. And Stephen's principal efforts these days is working with the Alliance for High-Performance Digital Manufacturing. And he's doing that in conjunction with the National Center for Manufacturing Sciences, which is run by a fellow named John Riley up in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I think this is a big deal. I'm curious what you guys think, but it's a big deal because what Intel is trying to do right now is help middle America. This so-called missing middle, if you will, that comprises, 70% of companies in this country that, are quote-unquote classified as small. And Intel wants to go in there and help them be more competitive. And Intel wants to bring manufacturing back into the U.S. And that is no small task. But Intel is no small company, and Steve is no lightweight. So you take a great company like Intel, you take a brilliant guy like Steve Wheat, you take a big problem, I think that's a reason to watch. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, Stephen Wheat's obviously a household name in the community, but this digital manufacturing initiative, I think, is going to be very interesting to watch. Like you said, he's sort of trying to connect the dots here, trying to connect some of the smaller companies in the supply chain to these bigger companies that do tend to already use HPC or supercomputing to some extent, but the smaller companies in the supply chain of the Boeings and the GMs of the world tend not to. It's a harder leap for them to get from their workstations up to more advanced systems. So this is a good initiative. It's the vertical I think Intel has chosen sort of initially to look at in the spirit, and that's why this group's about that. But if they have success here, I think they'll start attacking these verticals one at a time with this missing middle theme in mind. But this is a good place, and Stephen Wheat seems very committed to this. It'll be interesting to watch how this develops.
Yeah, Stephen has been extremely committed to this digital manufacturing role, and it's something that we're involved in. It's something HPC Wire is involved in, but more importantly, it's really across industry. It's multiple vendors, it's multiple users, it's policymakers, and Stephen has been instrumental in reaching out to expand the breadth of this alliance and raise the issue where we're talking about it at multiple conferences. We're talking about it at different HPC specific meetings throughout the industry. He's, you know, stoking the fire at other companies that Intel partners with. And, you know, when you dial into the regular Friday Alliance meeting, you're dialing into an Intel bridge. And, you know, Stephen is the one who's you know, coordinating those conference calls. It's not an Intel group. It's an industry group. But Stephen's done as much or more than anybody to really raise the issue nationwide.
So we're going to hop on a plane now, and we're going to travel from the Pacific Northwest to a spot on the globe that's always been a hotbed of activity, and that is the Middle East. And in specifics, we're headed to Israel, and we're going to introduce our next person to watch, and he is E.L. Waldman, who is the CEO and founder of Mellanox Technologies. And I guess there's a million reasons to watch him and to watch them. Certainly they come from a part of the globe that, I don't know if right off the top of your head originally was the hotbed of HPC, but it kind of is now. Larry Ellison is watching them. He just took out a 10% stake in the company. So, if you're listening, we'd love to talk to you about what you're doing with them and with Sun. And, if Larry likes them, we like them. And I'm pretty sure Qlogic is watching them, too, because among one of the other things that Mellanox has recently done is they just acquired another competitor called Voltaire. So Mike and I met E.L. at Supercomputing. I found him to be a very focused, very bright, very driven fellow. He's going to grow this company. He's going to do it in a myriad of ways. I'm sure acquisition is one of them. And he's supported by another deep bench. He has Brian Sparks, who's a really, really sharp marketing fellow, Gilad Shaner. And Gilad is responsible for this great work that Mellanox has done in creating the HPC Advisory Council. They're all very well respected. So, you know, there's always been fireworks in the Middle East, and it looks like there's going to be more fireworks. It's just going to, you know, not necessarily be the kind we're accustomed to, but, you know, supercomputing fireworks. So, Addison, what great things do you see coming out of the Middle East this year?
Well, I usually meet with them at their Silicon Valley offices, but aside from that, Mellanox has seen substantial great growth over the last couple of years, and the fact that they just acquired Voltaire and really reduced the InfiniBand segment to a two-horse race between them and Qlogic, there's a lot going on here right now. And Eyal is going to be right in the center of it, you know, him and his excellent staff that you already mentioned, because if InfiniBand is going to continue to grow, it's going to have to do so in areas that are beyond just as a system interconnect, so or beyond HPC, and I think Eyal is trying to position Mellanox for those areas of growth that'll start hitting in multiple areas. Definitely a very dynamic part of the industry right now. Definitely something to watch.
Yeah, I think Eyal Waldman is one of these guys that's made his. made his name known in the community just because, I mean, if you didn't have Mellanox or Voltaire, InfiniBand might never have happened. In fact, it might never have caught on as an interconnect at all. Now he's sort of combined those two companies into one, so he's sort of driven this from day one. And so Mellanox is just a company that's changed the shape and the trajectory of HPC, and he continues to do so. And with this acquisition, I think they've just solidified the first place position of Mellanox, and like you said, Addison, it's become a two-horse race, but with clearly Mellanox in the driver's seat right now, and we're going to continue to see how he takes advantage of that over the next few years, and where he goes with that.
I think it'd be a reach to say InfiniBand would have existed. I've been watching InfiniBand ever since NGIO was merging with Server.io to become Future.io, and then became InfiniBand. There's been a long time coming. What Mellanox has done is grown importance from being, a silicon provider, which is just kind of one link in the chain, to being an InfiniBand solution provider that covers a whole range of the value chain.
So we have reached the last person of our list, and again, I want to say that it's difficult putting a list of 10 or 11 people together when you cover an industry such as this, because you could put a list together of 1,000 people and they would all be deserving, and frankly, I think you could probably put a list bigger than that. But you do have to put something together, and the last one is a little bit of a curveball. Our last person to watch is, at least from my perspective, the last billion people to watch, and that is the country of China, and more specifically, the team that built the Tenhu, which is now number one on the top 500. And I said earlier, the Russians are coming. Well, guess what? The Chinese are already here. And the Chinese, they have everything. I mean, they have political backing. They've got the manpower. They certainly have the geography. They have the capital. And it seems that they have the will to dominate. Now, getting to the top of any list is always a challenge. But as athletes know, staying there is something else. And this week, Tiger Woods fell out of number one in golf rankings. And Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer both lost in the Australian Open. So they're not going to be number one. I guess the question, Michael, is, will the Chinese be number one this time next year, or will somebody else?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a very good case to be made that they will be number one next year. But even more important is we're going to see more and more of Chinese systems at the top of the list and throughout that list of top 500 supercomputers. I mean, the Tianhe system is not just the number one system. It's sort of this watershed event for China and the international community in that it shows how interested and focused China is on bringing this technology into their national infrastructure. And it should show everybody else how important it is and how important it should be to everyone else. So it got a lot of attention because it came out as number one this year, but whether it's number one or not, or they lose this, we're going to see a lot more of these systems out of China in the years ahead. And the team that put this together, obviously, were working for a while. I mean, this is not a country where I can just call somebody up and say, hey, what are you guys working on, and get the story. I mean, it's sort of all hidden, but these guys have been working on this for a while, obviously. To come up with a 2.6 petaflop system, it didn't happen overnight, and they're investing a lot of money. There's a lot going on behind the scenes there, and I think we're going to see a lot out of China in the years ahead, and we're going to watch this whole country, obviously.
Yeah, and Jeff, you're right that there's this big event, and Michael, that there's this international response. I mean, we even just recently heard President Obama mentioning supercomputing in the State of the Union address, which is flagging it as a national initiative of importance for the U.S. So we're talking about the U.S. response and the importance to have not only supercomputing but address this missing middle problem and get supercomputing at a lower level and digital manufacturing into more people's hands. But I think the really important thing is, Jeff, to answer your question, I don't think this is a flash in the pan that we're just going to put up a number one system and then that's the last thing we're going to see from China. And in terms of this being something to watch on a going forward basis, I hosted a panel discussion at Supercomputing this past year, and it was called Analyst Crossfire. One of my panelists, Thomas Sterling from LSU, said in reference to this Chinese effort that it's not just the one-time installation, that China politically has a long-time heritage of five-year and N-year plans and staying the course for those five-year plans, and that this should be seen as the beginning of something, not as a point in time. I thought he had an excellent point there. So absolutely something to continue to watch for 2011.
Well, thanks, Addison. Thanks, Mike. I'd just like to say a couple parting words before the end of the show. And, you know, once again, I'd like to thank our listeners for listening in. I hope you like the show. I would love to hear from some of you, because if there's things that you would like differently, we'd be happy to do it. But we're thrilled to be able to bring certainly Michael's insight, but just as importantly, Addison's expertise. I mean, Addison takes a lot of time out of his week to be part of our show here, and he does it because you know, he loves this industry, and you know, we're thrilled to have him. I'd like to thank our sponsors who make all of this possible. And I would just like to make one final nod to all of you listeners. I mean, you know, we cover the high-performance computing space, but it's the human mind that makes all of this possible. And it's guys, you know, all of our listeners who have these amazing thoughts, these amazing ideas. They turn them into these really incredible products, and we're very beholden to you. So, you know, keep those ideas coming, and we wish everybody out there the best of success in 2011.
Yeah, we sure do. And thanks, Jeff, for joining us on this program. We really appreciate your input and your interest in this. It's like you said, it's a great list. It's a lot of fun to put together. And we wish we could, you know, pick 100 people or 1,000 people. But, you know, we've got our limitations. So we look forward to doing this again next year and the years ahead.
Yeah, people to watch. It's a great honor to be selected. It's a great pleasure of mine to do the show, and I'm looking forward to watching all of your selectees in the year ahead. Thank you, Jeff.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite with Michael Feldman and Addison Snell. Got a question or comment for Michael or Addison? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.